Untold numbers of people suffer from speech impediments. It's a disability that isn't always taken seriously. But consider the plight of Queen Elizabeth's father, King George VI. His brother was first in line for the throne, but then unexpectedly abdicated at the advent of World War II in order to marry a divorcee, Mrs. Simpson. And therefore, George was then left to lead the nation. And that's when a stutter, which had hampered his speech since childhood, would end up becoming high stakes, a battle against his own speech. And it's a drama that plays out in the new movie called The King's Speech.
What was your earliest memory?
What on earth do you mean?
Your first recollection.
I'm not here to discuss personal matters.
Well, why are you here then?
Because I bloody well stammer!
You have a bit of a temper.
One of my many faults.
The King's Speech stars Colin Firth as King George VI. Mr. Firth joins us by phone today. Good morning.
Good morning.
So this movie, as I understand it, was a role for you that it seems that you chose. And I'm wondering why.
Well, I suppose where friendship is portrayed in this story was very, very unusual. I think that it's very difficult to achieve a story about intimacy, particularly between friends, between two men, one man trying to reach another. And I thought this was probably one of the most eloquent attempts at doing that I'd ever seen.
You're talking about the friendship between the king and his speech therapist, Lionel Logue, played by Jeffrey Rush. You described it as psychotherapy by stealth that Logue is doing. And let me read your comment. You said, it's not so much face your demons and you'll be healed. It's that he recognizes this man has no friends and isolation is his problem. Isolation would seem to come along with being royalty.
Well, yes, I can only imagine. You know, you don't get a lot of access to royalty and the people that might help you research that. So you only have what's written and what's reported and what's, you know, various secondary sources. But I think this man was pretty friendless growing up. And I think that it would apply to his family. I don't think it would be exclusive to royalty. I think that men of that generation were probably isolated by the social codes of being male. I don't think it's entirely to do with the aristocracy. I think that it's to do with what, you know, various protocols that, you know, everyone had to observe. I think it was a very kind of closeted generation in all kinds of respects.
And having a speech impediment, of course, no great advantage, to be sure. You know, I'm reminded in looking at this portrayal, Colin Firth, of your colleague, and this movie is not a comedy, but what I'm reminded of is A Fish Called Wanda. Michael Palin plays someone with a huge speech impediment. How do you reveal the character when the manner of communication is such a difficult mechanism altogether?
Well, it's an interesting question because I think characters are revealed by how they face their problems. You know, the old Greek adage about character is plot, plot is character. I think what that means is that you find out about a person by the way they negotiate their obstacles. You find out whether they're courageous or not. You find out whether they fight or flee, whether they have any wits by which to do it. That's one of the things I studied when I got the material on George VI that I did. And there isn't a great deal, but there is footage of him. And it's the way he disappears into the silence. And it wasn't just the technical aspect of the stutter that fascinated me so much as just watching him, just watching the kind of courage that it took him to remain composed and then to simply go forward once he had overcome that particular moment, which must have felt like an eternity. So in some ways, I think it's absolutely indistinguishable, the character and the way he deals with the impediment. And I think that's what we're watching. That's the story. It isn't the cure or the overcoming of the stammer itself. It's how he manages it.
You certainly couldn't have planned that Prince William was going to announce his engagement as this movie was being released.
Indeed.
But it certainly, in a way, ironically fits so perfectly because this movie really breaks down that wall between the ruler and the ruled. Not only are you addressing kind of the isolation of royalty, which, as you say, to a certain extent is universal, but you're talking about a human problem and the fact that being royal or being famous, as you are as an actor, just heightens a problem that people deal with on their own stage in their own lives.
I think that's true. I'm trying to understand why this film seems to connect with so many people. And I've been in stories which are about modern life, and no one really cares very much about them. This is something that takes place in the 1930s. It's about royalty. It seems, on the face of it, not to apply to any of us. And so I've tried to make sense of it. And I think it is quite simply that they are issues that apply to everybody on some level. I think we all have issues about communication, whether we don't communicate adequately because the other person intimidates us, whether it's because we're in love or angry or shy. You know, it's frequently an issue. Then there's the issue of, you know, you don't have to be a person who speaks publicly to have something in your life which says you're up. You've got this moment, you have to take it, and everybody is depending on you, and there's that. And then the walls we build around ourselves, we hide behind formalities and protocols and manners and taboos, and a lot of those are extremely necessary. They serve to protect our dignity and our privacy and all sorts of things which are sacred to us, but they also serve, I think, to isolate us.
Well, let me ask you one last question. Your screenwriter is actually trying to write this made for decades. He asked Queen Elizabeth, the king's widow, for permission to tell the story in the 70s, and she wrote back to him saying the memories of these events are still too painful and wouldn't allow him to do this until she died. I'm wondering if you have any ideas on why that is.
I think she obviously cared for him very, very deeply, and I think watching him struggle and to be helpless by his side must have been overwhelmingly painful. And it sort of goes back to what I was saying about, you know, how one person can actually reach out and help another. I think our ability to do that is always limited. You know, anybody with children feel this. You don't want your kid to suffer. You want to be able to just reach in and physically take away whatever pain it is, whether it's a toothache or something worse. You just don't want to see somebody you love suffer. To have had to sit beside him during these terrors and to have witnessed what he was like in a room before he went out to make that speech, or what he was like in the room after he had come back feeling he'd failed. And to watch that year after year after year and watch the stakes go higher and higher and higher as he had to face adversaries with the rhetorical genius of Hitler, you know, and lead a nation, at least in spirit, into a war against somebody like that and against that ideology. I think it must have been mind-blowing. And in some ways, I think it would have been worse for her than it was for him. I think she definitely is known to have felt that, to have somehow blamed the abdication on his early death. You know, she felt that had that not happened, he would have had a more tranquil existence and, you know, wouldn't have died so young. Mm. So I think when someone writes to him and says, can I tell that story, please? I can well understand you saying, please, I really don't want to be taken through it, certainly by you who doesn't know anything about it.
Well, I enjoyed every minute of being taken through it in the film. It's an amazing performance that you give as King George. Colin Firth stars in the new film, The King's Speech, already getting predictions of an Oscar nod. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
If you want to hear more about movies, you can head over to our website. Check out the podcast Movie Date. Takeaway producer Christian Meinzer and Newsday critic Rafer Guzman talk about films. You can grab that at thetakeaway.org. And while you're there, give us your view of what 2010 was all about for you. This is our new iPhone assignment. Grab a picture, video, or audio of the thing or person, maybe an event that symbolizes your year.
For me, it's going to be tonight. My 12-year-old Olivia, her little one-act play is being produced in Brooklyn.
Awesome.
As part of the office. Real actors, real director. I'll be there. Good luck, Olivia. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.